Das kann so sein, dass ich nicht sagen, wenn wir heute sagen, dass wir hier mit Dalit. The Mishnah says, Shilim will rot to the Shova v'chud. Rabbi Chiba Abba Nehmerichon said, when the Mishnah said, if the Shomer pays, he gets the rights to collect the kefil, it doesn't mean he actually had to have paid. Even if he said he'll pay, he gets those rights. In fact, my Mishnah said, if he paid and did not want to swear, this suggests he has to have actually paid, and saying so wouldn't be enough. Mara says, no. The Mishnah then says, if he swore and he did not want to pay, which suggests that only wanted to pay would have been enough. Based on these contradictory inferences, we can't bring a proof from our Mishnah. The Mara says, the Braisa, though, that reports of Yechon, the Braisa says, if someone rents a cow and is stolen, the renter tells the owner, I will pay and will not swear. The ganav is then found, he pays kefil to the renter. We clearly see that the willingness to pay is enough to acquire the rights to collect the kefil. Our Papa said, once the Shomer Chinam says that he was negligent with the deposit and he therefore must pay, he gets the rights to collect the kefil because he could have made himself possible by claiming it was stolen without negligence on his part. If the Shomer Sacher says that the deposit was stolen and therefore he has to pay, so he gets the rights to collect kefil because he could have made himself possible by claiming that a broker died. However, if a borrower says that he'll pay for the item, he does not get the rights to collect kefil. Why? Because the only way he could have made himself positive by claiming that the item broke or died. And that's a very uncommon thing to happen, so he didn't want to make that claim. Others say, Papa said, even if a borrower says he'll pay, he gets the right to collect kefil because he could have made himself pot by claiming the item broke or died. Rav Vid said, Abaye said that a borrower does not get the right to collect kefil unless he actually pays, because a borrower gets only benefit from this relationship, and therefore his saying so does not suffice. The Braisa supports Rav Vid. The Braisa says, if a borrowed item was stolen and the borrower went ahead and paid for it, and the ganav was then found, the kefil is paid to the borrower. In fact, this Braisa does not refute the first version of Rav Papa, because he would agree that if the borrower actually paid, he would get kefil. Shall we say that it refutes the second version of Rav Papa? And the Gemara, Rav Papa would say, just as we explained in the Mishnah, which says that he paid, and we said it meant that he will pay, he says he'll pay, this will do the same thing over here in the Braisa. In fact, remember, the Braisa says he went ahead and paid, which can't be explained to mean that he said that he's going to pay. The Gemara says it means that he went ahead and said that he will pay. In fact, remember, the Braisa regarding the renter says, and he said he would pay, and the Braisa regarding the borrower says he went ahead and paid. That shows that regarding the borrower must mean that he actually paid. That's a different Lashonis in the different Braisas. The Gemara says these Braisas weren't taught together, and the verbiage used in one therefore can't be used to prove something taught in another braisa. They asked in the yeshivas of Chi and Rabbeisha and Rabbeshaya regarding these braises, and they were told that the taka were taught together. Therefore, it shows that the braisa means that the borrower actually paid and refutes the second version of Rav Papa. Fekmar, it's obvious that if the Shomer said he will not pay and then went ahead and said he will pay, then he'll get the right to collect kefil because he said he'll pay. What is halacha if he first said he will pay and then changed his mind and said he will not pay? Do we say he's retracting what he originally said, or do we say that he's just looking to stall but still means to pay? What if he said he'll pay and died before paying and his Yorshim then said that they will not pay? Do we say that they're retracting what he originally said, or do we say they're just looking to stall but still mean to pay? What if the children of the Shomer paid? Can the owner tell my only gave the right to collect kefil father because he did a favor for me, or do we say that he surely gave the right to the children as well? What if the Shomer paid the children of the owner? Can they tell the Shomer that, listen, their father would have gave him the right to collection because he did a favor for the father, but the Yorshim will say that they're not giving the right? Or do we say, no, he gets the right in that case as well? What if the children of the Shomer paid to the children of the owner? There, no one did any favors or anything, but maybe it stays that the right of collection does move. What if the Shomer agrees to pay for half of the item? Does he get half the kefil? What if he borrowed two cows and paid for one of them? At least he paid an item in full. What happens then? What if he borrowed from partners and paid back one of them in full? What if partners borrowed and one of them paid back his portion in full? Does he get his share of the kefil payment? What if he borrowed from a woman and paid back her husband? What if a woman borrows and her husband paid for it? All these cases we leave off with a teiku. Huna said, when the Shomer pays for the item, we make him swear that the item is not in his possession because we're concerned that he may have wanted the item and decided to keep it. In fact, my Mishnah says, if someone lent money on collateral and lost the collateral, and he told the borrower, I lent you a sella and the collateral is worth half a sella, and you therefore owe me the difference. And the borrower says the collateral is worth a full sella, the borrower is potter from having to swear because it's not even a partial admission. If when the lender says he still owed the difference of half a sella, the borrower responded that the collateral was worth 3/4 of a sella, he'd be chayv to swear that the collateral was worth that amount and would pay then the difference. If the borrower claims that the collateral was worth 2 sella, and the lender says it was only worth 1 sella, the lender would be potter from swearing because there's no partial admission. If the borrower says it was worth 2 sella, and the lender says it was only worth 1.5 sella, he would have to swear and then pay the difference. The Mishnah says, who swears? It's the lender, because if the borrower were to swear, the lender may bring out the collateral, which would contradict the oath of the borrower and make him possible to swear or serve as a witness. Now, which case is the Mishnah? Because we had 4 cases over here. Which case is this last statement going on? It can't be going on the last case, because the reason the lender swears there is because he made a partial admission, not because we're concerned for the status of the borrower. Rather, Shmuel said it's going on the second case. In that case, the borrower really should swear because he made a partial admission, but we instead make the lender swear out of concern that the lender will produce the item to contradict the borrower. Now, if Rav Huna is correct, we will make the lender swear that he does not have the item in his possession. So why are we concerned that he'll produce the item? If tomorrow Rabbo or Rav in the name of Rabbi Yosef said, the case is that he has witnesses that it was burned in a fire. If so, why are we concerned he'll produce the item? Rabbi Yosef says, you're right. He has witnesses that it was stolen from him. Still, where will he get the item to be able to produce it? If tomorrow he'll expend energy to find the ganav and get the item back. If so, when the lender swears, we should be concerned that the buyer will track down the ganav and get the item and prove the lender wrong. And for the Gemara, the lender knows who came into his house and can therefore more easily find the ganav. The borrower doesn't know who came into the lender's house and therefore will not be able to track down the ganav. Abaye said, the reason we move the oath to the lender is because we're concerned that even if the lender first swears that he does not have the item, he will then look for it better and will find it. Rav Ashi said the Mishnah means that in the second case, they both swear. The lender swears that he does not have the item in his possession. The borrower swears to the value of the item. The Mishnah means to say that we make the lender swear his oath first, because if we didn't do so, he may produce the item after the borrower swears, making the borrower become puzzled to swear or act as a witness in the future.